How many of you guys Office fans out here? Anybody? Yeah, stuck with it through the whole thing? Michael Scott is one of the most awful and best characters ever created. Like, to watch him, it's like, it's funny, and it's also just so much tension. Like, you feel so much tension when you watch him interact with people and how tremendously awkward it is, right? And he really is the perfect person to set up what we're going to be talking about today, which is self-awareness. Steve Carell, he's the actor that plays Michael, did this interview about, you know, the show, and they asked him, tell us about Michael Scott. What do you think about him? And he said, Michael Scott is a man who clearly lacks self-awareness. And I've always said, if he even caught a glimpse for a moment of who he really is, his head would explode. You know, and it's tremendous. And that's part of the comedy of the show, is you watch this person who thinks everyone sees them a certain way. And his self-perspective is this, like, of this type of leader and this type of comedian and this type of person. But no one in his life actually sees him that way. The reality is so different. And whenever there's a gap between our self-perception and the reality, it creates tension for everyone around us, right? And that's kind of what's going on in that show. And we laugh at it because it's funny, because it's not us. It's like, it's not me, so that's funny. That's funny because it's not me. But sometimes it is us. And another thing Steve Carell said in that interview is, if you don't know a Michael Scott in your life, then you probably are Michael Scott in someone else's life. And I think at some time or another, we're all a little bit Michael Scott. And what I mean by that is, we all have a gap between our self-perception and then the way others receive and perceive us. And whenever there's a gap, we feel tension. We feel tension when there's an apparent gap between someone's self-perception and reality. And when it's us, we are usually not the ones that are aware of it, but everyone else is. And we all have a self-awareness issue. If you don't know you have a self-awareness issue, let me just inform you now, you do have a self-awareness issue. We all have things that fly just under the surface of our awareness, just off the radar, that we don't know about us, but everybody else in our life probably knows about us. And whether we're aware of them or not, they are causing problems for us. And that by gaining some self-awareness, we can become better leaders, husbands, fathers, mothers, all these things, right? So you want to be a great leader, right? And so maybe you're like, I don't know how self-awareness kind of fits into that. And it actually fits in a ton. Like, all these recent surveys and studies done on CEOs, what makes a successful leader in a business environment, what they found is the number one predictor of success across the board, number one predictor of success, self-awareness. Which is not good news for Michael. But if you want to lead your people, your business, your company well, then you need self-awareness. If you want to be a great parent, gosh, you got to have self-awareness. And you can probably get away with it for the first couple years because they don't know enough to see you for who you really are. But once your kids hit, like, adolescence, they become incredibly aware, hyper-aware of your weaknesses, right? And they'll let you know about some of them, right? But if you're not already aware, if you're not aware of some of the things that you're bringing to the table and some of your weaknesses and maybe some of your inner drive and motivation, if you're not aware of those things, then you will struggle to connect authentically with your kids as they become aware. And it'll become a real obstacle in your relationship. So we're going to get a quick definition of what I mean by self-awareness. And really, it's being conscious or being awake to your own personality, strengths, weaknesses, desires, feelings, and motivations. That's a lot, right? Because it means a lot. Being conscious and awake to your own personality, strengths, weaknesses, desires, feelings, and motivations. And this is incredibly important because what you don't know can hurt you, believe it or not. And the truth is, and what Michael needs to know, and what you all need to know, and what I need to know, is that what we don't know is hurting us. It is. There are things that you don't know about you that everyone else in your life knows about you, and they wish you knew it. They wish you knew it too. So if this is true, and if we all kind of know it's probably some level that we should be self-aware. And how many of you guys have taken an assessment like a Myers-Briggs, maybe hit an Enneagram test at some point recently that's been popular? You've done like a Facebook quiz, which princess am I? You know, that kind of thing. Whatever. You've done some kind of like work on this, or maybe it was part of your job interview process and you learned some stuff about yourself. Like, that's a step and that's good. We want to take a step. But normally what we do is we get one inch in to self-awareness and then we stop. Right? And so we're like, I learned I'm an introvert. And really, it just what we do is we create an excuse. So like, I'm an introvert, so I don't really have to talk to you. I feel uncomfortable with this. And it's okay, because I'm an introvert. Or like you do any grand thing and you're like, I'm an eight, and so I'm just like this challenger, and this is just the way I am. So I just push people over. I just mow people down. I just say things that are insensitive, and it's just who I don't know. You know, I'm an eight. It's what I do. You know, we use it as an excuse, and that's not the way to use these things. So we get about an inch deep, and then we pull back. So why is that? Why don't we continue the journey of self-awareness? I think it really comes down to two things. One is that we don't have time, or we don't think we have time for this kind of work. Because the truth is, if you're going to go deep with self-awareness and really learn things about yourself, it's going to take an investment of time. Tim Keller says this, that self-awareness is never the destination. It's only a step on the way to transformation. So our goal is not actually awareness. Our goal is that we would grow, that we would become better at these things, that we would understand ourselves better so that we could experience transformation, which is ultimately what God wants for us. And so we can't stop at an inch deep. So you might not think you have time, but you don't have time, honestly, to waste not being self-aware. The other reason why I think we stop is because it hurts. You know, you get about an inch in and all of a sudden you get hit with a very uncomfortable truth about yourself. Or you have a conversation and somebody shares with you something about the way other people perceive or experience you and it just hurts. And then you're like, I just don't know if I have the emotional capacity to keep doing this. I'm just going to ignore it. I'm going to go watch a movie. Let's see the new Avengers movie and we'll just never think about this again. You know, we just distract ourselves because we aren't comfortable with the pain. But the truth is, unless the pain of your current circumstance is actually greater than the pain of the transition and change, you'll never change. And that's just true because change is hard. Change is uncomfortable, but if the pain of your current circumstance, if you see your current circumstances being more painful than the pain of transition, then you'll actually experience change. And so I'm just going to share with you up front, my goal is to make you incredibly uncomfortable with your current circumstance. I want to increase the pain in some capacity for your benefit. And this is why, because there is no prison more secure than the one you don't know you're in. This is a Shakespeare thing, so if he said it, it must be incredibly true. I was hit by this, and I think it's true. The things that we don't realize are holding us back are some of the most significant things that we can face in our life. And so the goal is to wake up today a little bit. Things that we are asleep to about ourselves, that if we wake up, we can experience real change and transformation. So, first step is that you need to know yourself so that you can stop hurting and start helping others. Know yourself so you can stop hurting and start helping. So here's what I mean by this. Actually, let's just jump into what Jesus says. Jesus is talking to a group of people in Matthew 7 who have this, you know, that what it looks like they're trying to help people. They're just really about helping people know God better, know God more, do things better that'll please God. So it looks like they're kind of about people, but Jesus really knows that they're not. And this is a group of Pharisees who really are ultimately trying to kind of lift themselves up in the eyes of everyone else. Jesus kind of knows what they're up to. They have a severe self-awareness problem, and this is how he addresses it. Chapter 7, judge not, that you be not judged. For with the judgment you pronounce, you will be judged. And with the measure that you use, it will be measured to you. Why do you see the speck that's in your brother's eye, but do not notice the log that's in your own? Which is an incredible metaphor. He keeps going with it. Or how can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye when there is a log in your own eye? So he uses this speck log thing to really get his point across. You know, like if you see this person, and they've got like this little piece of sawdust in their eye, right? And it's like, oh, I just want to get that out for you. But you have an enormous log that's just knocking people out every time you turn your head, coming out of your own eye. And you just like, how in the world could you not see that log in your eye, and you're worried about this thing in your brother's eye? So he's really trying to draw the point. And then he brings it home with this: you hypocrite, first take the log out of your own eye, then you will see clearly to take the speck out of your brother's eye. So I think sometimes we read this verse and we stop at the beginning. We're like, judge not. Don't judge other people. You have no business judging other people or trying to tell them there's a speck in their eye. Well, that's not the point of the verse. The point isn't that Jesus wants us to let everybody leave all the specks in their eyes. That's not the point, because we actually are supposed to help each other. If we notice self-destructive patterns and habits or behaviors in someone's life, we should love them enough to try to help them, right? But what he's saying is, there's a barrier between your ability to help, and it's your awareness of your own issues. That if you're not aware of what's going on in your own life, you're not going to see clearly to be able to help this person. And I think we can sum it up with, self-awareness is a prerequisite to personal influence. If you want to have influence in somebody's life in a way that's actually helpful and not hurtful, then you need to start with self-awareness. That seems counterintuitive. Like, I want to help people, so I should learn them, right? I need to learn everything I need to know about them. Well, that's good, but start with knowing you. Because what you don't know about you will be an obstacle to your influence. And I said personal influence here because, you know, there's different types of influence. And if you've ever heard of positional or personal authority in someone's life, so if you're their boss, or let's say you're their parent or whatever, you have a certain positional authority, and in some capacity, they have to do whatever you say, whether they like it, whether they agree with it, whatever, because, you know, you have that positional authority in their life, at least for a while. So Michael Scott, as much as no one really clearly respects him, they still have to do what he says because he's their boss. You don't want to function out of positional authority. What you want is personal authority. You want people to respect you, see you as a person of character and strength, and they want your influence in their life, and that will never happen without self-awareness. It'll never happen. It'll always be an obstacle to that. And so you think you're helping people, and what you often do is hurting them. So it's like a parent who really wants to help their kid to succeed at, let's say, baseball. And like, man, I know you'd be happier if you got that swing right. So like, let's just pour the time in. Let me just help you. I'm just trying to help you get that swing right. And I just really want you to make contact and just be a better ball player. But what that means is that they aren't aware of the insecurities and the things in their own heart that are causing them to put an enormous amount of weight on their child's athletic performance. That their own insecurities mean that they're kind of like, they need their kid to succeed because of what it says about them. So then all of a sudden it's like, no, we got to put more hours in. We're going to just like review the tape. We're going to say, no matter if the kid likes it or not, we're just in it, we're in it, we're in it. I'm yelling at you from the stands because I can't control myself because there's actually something inside of me that's not resolved. And so it looks or feels like I think I'm helping you, but what I'm doing is putting a huge weight of expectation on you. And it's causing you as a child to equate love with success. And it's hurting you. But I don't see it. It's that kind of thing. Or it's a spouse who wants to help their husband or wife by helping them with budgeting, right? Because they clearly need help. You know, you're not organized. You can't seem to control this. I just really want to help you get organized with the way you approach your finances, right? So here's what I'm going to do. We're going to do, I'm going to give you this amount, and I need you to just kind of account back to me on this. And so what they don't realize is that it's actually their incredible compulsive need for control. And because of their fear in their heart and in their life, that's causing them to want to control and micromanage, right? And that kind of crushes the individuality of their spouse. It crushes the joy of their spouse. They think they're helping, but they're actually hurting, right? There's something about self-awareness, that awareness of the log in our own eye, that if we can remove it, then we can see clearly and we can help somebody. We can we'll also have more grace for them in the meantime during that transition. So the people in your life will be grateful, okay? Number one, people in your life will be grateful if you gain some self-awareness. And the next step is really more for your own growth. So you need to know yourself so you can know what growth looks like for you. this is important because I think sometimes we perceive that the direction we should be going, like we perceive what growth looks like based on the people around us, but that's not always, like, the best for somebody else is not always what best looks like for you. And that can be very confusing. And I think in our time period, really, like, we do this thing where we gauge value by comparison constantly. And it can go one of two ways. It can go in this direction where you're comparing your strength to other people's weaknesses, which that's kind of what's happening in that passage where Jesus is talking to the Pharisees. They're comparing their strengths to other people's weaknesses so they can feel better about themselves. And that leads to arrogance. It leads to pride. And that's you, like, looking at other people constantly saying, well, he just doesn't execute, doesn't perform. He just doesn't have control over his personal life, and I have these things. And you just constantly feel really good about yourself, and you don't need to do work. In the meanwhile, everybody around you knows that there's these things that you don't know about yourself, and it causes you to be, you deceive yourself. And you live that way thinking that you're just this incredible top-of-the-line person, and the whole time you're missing stuff. But that's actually, I think, less common nowadays than the other way we go with this. More often now is that we compare our weaknesses against other people's strengths. And I say more often now because I think it's really connected to the rise in social media and the very public way that we live our lives and the way that we interact with each other, is that at any point in time, you can pull up on your phone everybody in your life's best moments, like their highlight reel, their very best things, and then you compare it to whatever's going on in your own heart. And you decide, oh my gosh, I'm failing. I'm just failing as a mom. I'm failing as a husband. I'm failing as a leader because we're comparing our very worst moments with somebody else's strengths, you know, like, Here's something that I think might help. So I like basketball. I like to watch basketball. And sometimes I watch LeBron James play. And I'm like, I wish I could play like LeBron James. Now, let's say I took it really seriously. And I was like, you know what being successful looks like? It looks like being like LeBron James. So I took on, I'm going to figure out how he works out. And I'm going to try to mimic that to probably a smaller degree of success. I'm going to try to, like, practice as much as he practices. I'm going to try to, like, get his, like, swagger, you know, when he walks in a room, and that kind of, the way he talks, the way he dresses. I'm just going to channel all that because that's what success looks like. How successful do you think I would be at channeling LeBron James? Anyone think I would pull that off? Maybe, hopefully, one or two. But no, there's a very real problem, right? It's not in the cards for me to be LeBron, right? Because there's a height issue. There's also, like, a scrawniness issue that is just going to be in the way, right? It's not in the cards. His strengths are not going to be my strengths, no matter how hard I try. And if I think success looks like him, then I'm always going to fall short, right? But this is what we don't realize. The reverse is also true. LeBron is not going to be as good at some things as I am, right? Like, he can't totally be me. At least I feel that way, and I tell myself that. And I don't know if that's true. Maybe he would be. But chances are, he's got his lane, and I've got mine, and our strengths are very different, and what success looks like for me is very different for him. But sometimes that gets very skewed, especially online, and you're watching, you know, it's the first weekend of summer, and, you know, this mom takes her kids out on a nature hike, and they have a picnic, and it looks amazing, and she brought, like, four courses, and all the children are happy, they're dressed well, and Peter, the five-year-old, sees a bluebird and says, Mommy, look at that beautiful part of God's creation, and she rolls into this devotion about how God's made us, and it's this perfect moment, and then you're seeing that, reading about it, and you look over, and your kid has dried jelly on their face from the Uncrustable that you unwrapped and threw at them a couple hours ago, right? And you're feeling like, oh. But the truth is, you're never going to get to real success and growth for you by comparison to others, because it's really going to be about you and what the best you looks like. And the sooner that you stop chasing other people's bests and start pursuing your own, knowing your own, the better off you'll be. What we tend to do when we're not aware of our own strengths and weaknesses is it's kind of like, life is a little bit like blindfolded archery. I should have put the blindfold on after I grabbed the archer thing, because now I'm not looking for it. Let's see. Here we go. And we're just kind of shooting stuff out there. We're not quite sure. We know we're heading for a target, right? But we don't know if we're hitting it. And if we did hit it, every once in a while, maybe you hit the target, right? Did I hit you? That would have been amazing. It's not what I intended, but a great moment and memorable for you and people around you. So like, you know, you might hit the target every once in a while, but you don't know why. You don't know why you were particularly good at that or why that went well, because you're not that aware of your strengths. And you don't know why you killed a bunch of people either, or mowed down people or maimed people, because you're not aware of your weaknesses. And so even your successes are kind of random and your failures are hurtful because we're not self-aware and we don't know what actual success in our lane looks like. And we have to accept that God has wired us specifically for a certain type of contribution. So we want to know our strengths so we know how to channel our efforts. We want to know our weaknesses, not so we can make our weaknesses strengths, because chances are, if you're just a terribly disorganized person, you should work on that. But it's never going to be that you're going to flip it and you're going to be that chick with the cleaning show. What's her name? The thing of whatever. You're not going to just become an awesome organized person. Your chances are you can maybe sand off the edges, which would be really helpful, but you maybe aren't going to reverse that, right? So you want to know your strengths, you want to know your weaknesses. And then this is a really hard work. You want to know the why. The why behind those things. Those feelings, motivations, and desires that are under the surface. And this is where we don't get to when we just take an assessment and then walk away. You know, we don't get to these deeper why questions. And these are the ones that can get a little uncomfortable. But whenever Jesus is talking with people about behaviors and issues in their life, he never stops at the behavior. And just says, that's really good. You should keep doing that. Or that's really, it's always like, he talks on the issue of motivation. Because like these Pharisees that were trying to help people by telling them how they can know God better, that seems like a great thing on the surface. But he's like, oh, under the surface, it's all for the wrong reasons. You have a completely wrong version of perception of yourself. Your motivations are completely backwards. They're all about you. And so even a good act is now tainted because of this inner motivation issue. So he always goes to that level of under the surface, and that's where a lot of transformation can take place. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just going to share a little bit with you, because self-awareness has been a big part of this last year for me. I think it happens in times of transition, because nothing makes you feel more insecure than walking into a room where nobody knows anything about you. And then you kind of, it brought on for me this issue of like, deeper self-reflection and trying to figure out some things about myself. And there's been some resources I'll share with you in a minute that have been incredibly helpful. There's some things that I always knew about me and the way I functioned, and I kind of had some type of a read on my strengths and weaknesses, but I did not nearly understand some of these deeper underlying things. So one of the things that's been helpful and hurtful for me to discover is that deep under the surface, I have this narrative that I kind of live out of, a belief in something that I know now is not, I know it's not true, but I constantly live out of it and think it's true, and it's that I have this core fear that the world is going to overwhelm me. I do not have what it takes. I do not have the resources to handle what's coming at me, and so I have to compulsively gather as much knowledge and skills and everything that I can as a self-defense against things, to try to store up resources so that I can have enough to handle what is eventually going to take me out. And this is kind of like, it sounds right, like, and on the surface, it's like, oh, you read a lot of books, and it's like, yeah, that's really good, except that I read books as self-defense, and that's not good. That's a whole nother thing. That has a whole shadowy side to it, right? And it also has shown me that I'm a hoarder by nature, not of like junk, not like stuff in our house, but of those things, of knowledge, of skills, of time, of my energy. It's kind of like I feel like I have this very limited supply, and that like I'm just kind of have my eyes always on the gauge, that like, oh, that's going to cost me, that's going to cost me, that's going to cost me. I don't know what that, I don't think I can give time to that because it's not worth, I don't have that much time. I don't think I can give enough energy to that person right now, because I just have a limited supply of people energy, which is very true. And if you know me, you know, I'm an introvert. I can extrovert for little bursts of time, but overall, I'm an introvert. And so I feel like I'm constantly aware of how much people energy I have. And so I'm always rating whether or not I have enough for this, or this thing, or this person, or this group, right? And it causes me to limit myself constantly. And I hoard my time, I hoard my energy. I struggle with generosity. And I didn't realize I struggled with generosity, but this has kind of woken me up to it. And it made me realize, oh my gosh, I constantly feel like I'm not going to have enough. And this plays itself out in so many ways. And what's been helpful to me as I've realized this is I've been able to take scripture and what the gospel says is true and apply it directly to that need, to that lie. So there's this beautiful picture in the Old Testament where Israel has left Egypt and they're in the wilderness. And they're running out of food and resources, are hungry. And so God begins to provide for them food. And he rains down bread, and they call it manna, and it's enough for everybody. It's more than enough. It's more than enough. But there's a condition with it. He's like, I'm going to give you everything you need, and it's more than enough. But don't you dare hoard it and store it, because if you do, it'll rot. It doesn't last. It doesn't go from one day to the next. I give you abundantly enough, but you can't hoard it and store it up, because that's actually a lack of faith. And so for me, that picture is just like reminding myself that God has more than enough for everything that I need, and I do not have to store up for the impending doom that's going to come in my way. And I don't have to constantly monitor the gauges, because you know what? There's always going to be more. There's always going to be enough for what he's called me to do, and I don't have to live in fear of that. There's this verse that Paul wrote to the church at Corinth that has been incredibly helpful to me, and he says, God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that you, having all sufficiency in all things at all times, you will be able to abound in every good work. And that idea of all sufficiency, all things at all times, I can just speak that straight into that part of my heart that believes this lie. And when I'm feeling that, like, oh my gosh, I don't have enough, I don't have enough, I don't have enough, I can just kind of take a breath, clench the fists, and say, all sufficiency, all things at all times, and just kind of like release. Say, God has enough for me. I need to trust. And it's okay. And, you know, that has helped me to grow in so many ways and unleash more generosity and more trust in my life. But if I had never known those things that were under the surface, then I wouldn't know how to apply the gospel to it to grow through those things. So hopefully you found some motivation at least to start taking a step towards this, because I think that could change so much for you and for people around you in your life. I'm going to give you a couple resources that might help because they're helpful to me, right? So this first one is a study that you can do with a group. You can do it with your small group. You can also do it personally, just in your life. It's called I Said This, You Heard That. It's by Kathleen Edelman, and it's about how wiring colors your communication. It's about your innate wiring, and this is about temperaments. And I don't know if you know about temperaments. It's like old school stuff. The words usually associated with it are melancholy, phlegmatic, choleric, those kind of things. Those words are hard to remember, and kind of nobody wants to be a phlegmatic. Sounds terrible. So what she's done is substituted colors for those words. So those temperaments, like red, yellow, green, and blue, and it makes the conversation a lot more easy and significantly more easy to identify with. This is going to help you in so many ways to know how you've been wired by God, and what your best looks like, what your strengths looks like, and show you a little bit about your weakness. Another resource that's been helpful for me is the Enneagram, which I know you might be thinking, Enneagram, is that thing where we gather around, we close our eyes, and we hold it, and it moves around, and it's like, no, that's a Ouija board, and that's a very bad thing. It's a different thing. Enneagram sounds like a creepy, weird thing because it sounds strange, but it's not. It's just it's a pretty ancient typing system of understanding different ways that people relate to the world. It comes down to there's 9 basic narratives by which people live and lenses through which they view the world. And everybody's going to fit in some capacity into one of these 9 narratives. And it's incredibly helpful, especially for identifying those underlying things. So this book, The Road Back to You by Ian Cron and Suzanne Stabile, has been incredibly helpful for me. If you're like, I'm not a book person, you can hit the podcast. He has a podcast called Typology, and it's also helpful. Still, you should read the book. Always, it's going to be my answer. You should always read the book. But some of you are not going to read the book. I get that. But this can be truly helpful for you. It has been for me. And one more thing, because some of you are like, I don't read books, don't listen to podcasts, no interest in doing that. I get that. That's fine. Here's what I'm going to ask you to do. And really, everyone should do this. Ask a question. I want you to ask someone in your life, probably several people, maybe a coworker, someone in your family, and a friend, someone that's close to you, that'll give you an honest answer. Ask them one question. what is it like to be on the other side of me? What is it like to be on the other side of me? This question, Jeff Henderson, he's a pastor at Gwinnett Church, threw this out there probably about a year or so ago, and it's just incredibly transforming if you really get honest answers to it. And they can hurt. Like I said before, it can hurt. And if you have people, everybody just tells you, oh man, you're awesome, blah, 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 you get new friends, you know, because chances are there's a more honest answer that'll be more helpful. We need other people's perspective because we just don't see as clearly as we think we do. I'm colorblind, which normally doesn't like cause major problems, but I'm also a little bit of a graphic designer. And so I did that for years here, and I do that at contract for businesses sometimes. And, you know, it can be a real issue if you can't see colors very clearly, right? So it's not like I see like black and white like a dog or something, you know. It's like you just, there's a certain spectrum of colors that doesn't appear very clear to me. And so at first, I would always just kind of like, just try to work it out on my own. And then I'd make this thing. I'm like, you're working with blue and green. And I'm like, it looks pretty cool. And then I'd ask Erin about it. What do you think about this? She's like, why'd you use purple and orange? And I'm just like, oh, yeah, I was trying something different. But like, what if I use blue and green? What blue would you think would be good? Can you show me? You know, it's like, and after a while, I realized I can shortcut this whole thing by bringing people in early and saying, like, I think this is blue. Is this blue? And Caesar would be like, no, man, that's not blue. I'm like, okay, can you show me a blue? And he like, dials it in. I'm like, okay, we saved ourselves a lot of time because I began to realize I don't see it as clearly as I think I do, and I need help. And that's true for all of us. We need help. So ask people in your life. And then we're just going to kind of wrap up here. This process can be hard. It can take a while, and it can sometimes be uncomfortable, and it can bring up self-doubt. And I just want to leave with this encouraging, a more encouraging tone than this, and so that you're ready to take this on. I want to motivate you to take this on. Ephesians chapter 2, Paul says this: we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. And there's another New Living Translation uses the word masterpiece. And the Greek actually is this like artistic word, and it's using this, it's this picture, Paul's painting of like, you have been crafted specifically by a master artist for a purpose that is specific to you. That's an incredible truth. Michelangelo carved the statue of David. A lot of people don't know this. This is David. I didn't show the whole thing. Super inappropriate. So I'm just going to stick with this. But you know the thing, you know statues. One of the most famous statues in the world, right? People have, for centuries, come to look at this thing and stand in awe of it. But what a lot of people don't know is that Michelangelo carved it out of a piece of marble that had already been passed over plenty of times by tons of artists. They were like, oh, this is imperfect. This isn't going to work. And it was an unwanted, passed over piece of rock. And he carved this beautiful thing out of it. And if you were to talk, if we could talk to David's the statue and say, hey, how does it feel to be such an incredible statue? And if his answer came back, oh gosh, it's just so hard being unwanted and rejected. I just, you know, nobody, I just feel like people don't value me, and I'm just this unwanted piece of rock. When you just want to shake him and wake him up and say, like, no. I don't think you see. There were some rough things, right? It wasn't perfect, but God actually, there's a master artist who took that rock and carved something exquisitely beautiful out of it. He made it for a purpose. People have been standing in awe of this statue for centuries, looking at this, at you, and saying, this is beautiful, this is something great. Because you're taken by the hands of a master artist and turned into something. And God has wired you and has brought situations into your life, circumstances, that some of them good, some of them very hard, but they've all shaped you into who you are, and it all has a purpose. They're all part of his workmanship, his crafting of a masterpiece, and I promise you this. And I'm going to wrap up here. I promise you this. God is not surprised or disappointed by what you see in the mirror every day. And it's okay, and it's safe to look a little harder. Why don't we pray? God, I just thank you. I thank you for the way that you love us unconditionally, the way that you know us deeper than anyone, that you know all the deep things about us that we don't know about ourselves. You know the things that are self-destructive that fly under the surface of our awareness. God, you know the things that are hurting other people in our lives because we just don't know. And Father, I pray that you would wake us up, that you would wake us up to those things, that we wouldn't be asleep to ourselves, but actually come alive as the person that you have wired us to be, as the person that has been shaped by our life experiences. God, that you would set us on this path to accomplish what you have prepared beforehand for us to accomplish. We love you, and it's in the name of Jesus we pray. Amen.